Welcome one, welcome all to this pantheon of the information age. Before I go any further, I'd just like to thank the BBC and particularly Chris Baum for organising this for us and cutting through red quarter-inch tape to ensure that we're here. The first thing I want to bring to everyone's attention is a sign-in sheet. If you're new to the AES, please copy what everyone else is doing. Just write your name on it. We need it for our records. And next thing is to plug next month's event while you're all here. On the 12th of November, we'll be at the Dolby Theatre in Soho, where we'll be presenting it's called Cutting Edge Technology, and it's our fourth such session. Every year, we showcase the work of an academic institution. This year, it's Anglia Ruskin's Universities. I'm trying to remember what it stands for. Culture of the Digital Economy Department, which is a sort of big new media thing, and they're going to be showcasing some of their audio and media-related research. So that'll be extraordinarily interesting. It always is, and you'll get a chance to talk to people who are working at the cutting edge of research. But tonight's talk is Chris Lewis, who is of the BBC and the World Wide Web Consortium, to tell us about the Web Audio API, which he's been extraordinarily heavily involved in. So I'd very much like to hand over to him. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. Yes. So I'm going to talk about the Web Audio API. So I'm no longer at the BBC. There's been slight changes of billings as we went along. And also was billed early on with my colleague Olivia, who is not able to come tonight. So it's just me, and I'm not representing the BBC. But I am kind of representing the W3C and myself. And that's kind of where you find me on the internet. So could I get a quick show of hands? Because what I'd like to do is, if there's any questions as we go along, please, you can interrupt and shout at me. And I'll take them at the end if they're going to get complicated. But it's difficult to know a little bit where to pitch this kind of material. So could I get a show of hands about, has anyone done any kind of programming, particularly programming for the web? So we're a good half. And is anyone interested or involved in kind of education and teaching people about acoustics, audio, signal processing, that kind of thing? Okay, that's good. Okay, well, that's where I'm trying to pitch it. There's going to be some code, but hopefully nothing too scary. It's the best way to show you what it's all about. Anyway, me. So my background is in audio and acoustics. I did my doctorate at the University of Southampton at the Institute of Sound and Vibration Research. I was there as a postdoc for a little while, and I got a bit tired of that and decided that I wanted to get into my hobby, which was kind of web programming and programming in general, and I ended up joining the BBC. I joined the BBC as a kind of web developer in the audio and music, or radio music, audio music interactive. It had lots of different names, but I was basically building the Introducing website, which was a kind of site where unsigned bands could upload their music, and I kind of other music bits and pieces as well, just across the road in Henry Wood House. And then after a little bit of time at that, I joined BBC R&D. So this was my office. There's Andrew Mason. That's R&D at Kingswood Warren, I think. But it hasn't changed too much, or maybe a little bit. And now I work for FutureLearn, which is a kind of startup looking at teaching people things on the internet. So throughout my time at the BBC, I've been involved with the W3C, which is the World Wide Web Consortium, which was the standardizing organization set up by Sir Tim Berners-Lee to kind of bring a little bit of order to the web and web technologies so that you can write your websites and your web applications once and they'll run on a variety of different platforms and different browsers. And as time has gone on and more devices that we carry with us every day and we use every day are able to go onto the internet, including televisions and even radios sometimes, the need for standards is ever more important. So today I'm going to talk about a little bit about audio on the web and a kind of new technology that the W3C has been trying to standardize or helping to standardize called the Web Audio API, which brings more advanced manipulation, synthesis, digital signal processing type applications to the web platform. I'm going to tell that story a little bit because it's a bit dry if I just take you through a specification document. So I'm going to take you through a project that I worked on with some colleagues when I was at the BBC in R&D, where we looked to recreate some kind of classic BBC sound effects. And I also want to show you and hopefully get you excited to try this when you get home and make you realize that the web browser that you have on your computer today is actually underneath a powerful audio workstation waiting to have exciting applications built for it. So a little bit of history about audio on the web. So there's lots of reasons why we want to have audio on the web as part of the kind of what's called the web platform. So a good example is games. How are we going to go here? So my computer's at the back, so if I disappear, it means I'm going backwards to hit a button. But hopefully you can still hear me. So here's a game. So this is a game running in a browser, but this is a video to make it a bit easier for you to see. This is Angry Birds for the Chrome web browser. Hopefully. Let's have another go. Yep. There's plenty more where that came from. So for those of you who've done any programming on the web before, if you're trying to do this kind of thing in a web browser, it's actually quite difficult. There's a lot of sound effects there that having to be synchronized with what's happening on the screen and many, many overlapping sound effects. It's not a kind of piece of music that's looping. Each kind of event is triggering a sound. The other kind of thing we might want to do is notifications. So more and more applications are moving onto the web away from desktop, at least. And there's a kind of division between mobile apps and what's a web application and what's a mobile application. But you often need notifications, things that alert the user to something happening when they can't see the screen. And another interesting application is kind of sharing and creating music or sound. So applications where you can take advantage of the web and all of the strengths that it has to kind of collaborate with people to do musical applications. So I'm going to show you here. This is Jam with Chrome, which was a game where you can play musical instruments with other people. So when you see this, there's a few instruments playing, and these people are all over the world kind of collaborating on a little piece of music. It's kind of like a chat room, I guess, for musicians. You can all join this environment and play your instruments. And what's been sent over the web is just the information about what needs to be played and when, but it's all been kind of rendered in the browser using the Web Audio API. So a little bit of history. So if you wanted to build this kind of application, well, to be honest, if you want to build it today and you want it to work in lots of places, but in the last few years, if you wanted to build this kind of application, you use Flash. Problem with Flash is that it kind of doesn't work on iOS devices. One of the main problems. So its take up is getting less now, and also it's a proprietary platform. It doesn't necessarily run the same everywhere. So it's falling out of favor, let's put it that way. The other thing that's been available on the web for a while is a kind of audio tag. So this is a tag, you can wrap a file around it and it will give you a simple play button. The problem with that is when you hit play, you don't really know when the sound is going to start. You press play and it'll start streaming it in. It's kind of good for radio or playing a song. But if you want to say, when this bird hits this other bird, play this sound exactly at that point, it's not really suitable for that. So in order to address some of these issues and kind of bring a bit more of what people were used to in Flash and other programming environments and in kind of professional audio editing environments, that kind of thing, to the web, the W3C started up a working group to look at standardizing some proposals that had been made by various browser vendors. So the BBC were founding members of that group along with Google and Mozilla. And Google and Mozilla both brought candidate specifications along to that process that they thought would be suitable. And what we've tried to do over time is kind of take the best bits of both of those and turn it into a standard that can be implemented by all the different browser vendors. And that specification is the Web Audio API. So this is a and it kind of the front page of that, the editor's draft. So it's a fairly dry document, but what it does is describe, you know, how this API should be implemented on browsers so that they can take advantage of this technology. So some of the features that it allows is kind of sample accurate scheduling. So if you have a piece of sound, you can kind of say exactly when you want it to trigger, and it has a very kind of accurate clock that's running away from the animation and the rest of the stuff that's happening in the browser, so that when you say I want to play in a certain time, it can kind of fairly reliably do it. It's a kind of graph-based processing API, which is really nice. So it's, if anyone's used anything like Pure Data or Max MSP or those kind of environments, the Web Audio API is similar. So you get these kind of building blocks that have the sort of operations that you'd quite like to do within audio applications, and you can use JavaScript to kind of connect them together in to build a kind of processing graph. Yeah, so it's simple JavaScript APIs of building these building blocks together. And if you don't like what building blocks have been provided for you, you can write your own processing code using JavaScript. So you can get access to the raw samples that are coming from a streaming radio stream or from some audio file that you've loaded in, and you can kind of work at it on the sample by sample level. There's a question at the back.
Yeah, just a quick question.
Yeah, so a kind of drag and drop building block type thing. Yeah, yeah. So there's a guy who does developer evangelism, it's called, for Google, a guy called Chris Wilson, and he's written something that's like that. If I get time towards the end, I'll try and dig it up and show you. But yeah, it's basically that you can drag and drop, and under the hood, it's writing the code for you, essentially. It's quite early days for those sorts of applications, but I think, yeah, they're coming along gradually. There's even been a partial port of Pure Data to the Web Audio API as well. So you can kind of, yeah, bits of it work, bits of it don't. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about a project that we did to raise awareness of the API a bit more. So you might know this theme tune, hopefully. So that was the original theme tune to Doctor Who, as I'm sure you know, and it was recorded and put together at the Radiophonic Workshop. So here's a photo of the BBC Radiophonic Workshop at Maida Vale. This is Delia Derbyshire, who was kind of credited with composing the piece of music. Well, in fact, she wasn't credited with composing it. She was asked at some point by the person who commissioned the piece of work and had the kind of credit for composing it, did I write that? To which she replied, most of it. So she kind of was involved. It was an interesting environment from what I can tell from reading about it, where there was a good amount of collaboration between kind of creative composing type people and sort of people who were more kind of audio engineers who were kind of working together to kind of build pieces of music and compose them using quite kind of rudimentary techniques at the time. So the tunes that you just heard, the Doctor Who theme tune, so a lot of this was put together by splicing together small tape loops. So kind of recording single sounds onto a tape and then splicing them up. So that's what they're doing here, like looking at little bits of tape and kind of splicing them together to kind of put sounds together. It's quite a laborious process. So we thought that looking at some of these sound effects and how they were originally put together would be quite a fun thing to do with the Web Audio API to try and test out what its capabilities were and raise a bit of awareness of it. So we found a monograph in the R&D library, which describes some of the things that were happening around that time in the BBC in terms of kind of sound processing and sound effects. And in it, there was a device that was described for making gunshot sound effects. So reading from it, so prior to 1954, gunshot effects in drama were made either by the actual firing of a gun in front of a microphone or by slapping a ruler onto a table. It says the former, whilst being a pretty obvious method, was more difficult in practice than it seemed. So talking, so part, through this project, I was lucky to get introduced to Dick Mills, who was one of the people who worked at the Radio Phonic Workshop early on, and he kind of told me a few stories about this. So one of the things about the gunshot noise generator was what was happening is they had kind of ribbon microphones with quite delicate ribbon transducers, and they were firing guns with blanks in them for radio sound effect and breaking the microphones. And then they would call up an engineer and say, we broke the microphone again. And so I guess, like, so being a programmer, whenever I see something happen twice, I kind of want to automate it, and so I don't have to do it again. I guess they saw this and it kept happening, and they thought, I wonder if there's a way that we can stop them doing this. So what they came up with was this gunshot noise machine. So this was a machine where you could connect it up to some speakers and run the wire offset, and you could kind of trigger it when you wanted the effects to appear, and it would kind of make the sound of a gunshot noise. So in the monograph, there's this kind of block diagram of how they made gunshot noise effects. So there was a white noise generator and a gate, which you could kind of open the gate by pressing the button, and then it would just pass that through a low-pass filter, and it would sound like gunshot noise. So when we saw this diagram, we kind of thought we might be onto something, because in the Web Audio API specification that we've been working on, you kind of get lots of diagrams like this. So this is a kind of the way that the Web Audio API is described, where you kind of have processing blocks and you connect them together. So we thought, well, maybe we could just recreate each one of these blocks in this monograph and see if we could kind of make the sound of gunshot noise. Okay, demo. So here is the gunshot noise generator that we came up with, hopefully. Yep, so this is running inside Google Chrome. This is why I keep having to walk back here, and there's a few technical problems. So this is running on the browser, and this is kind of our recreation of that. So I can trigger it like that, and then I can change the cutoff frequency, which makes it sound closer or farther away. So maybe when there's a bit of that noise has been filtered out, then it kind of sounds like cannon fire in the distance or something like that. Let's see if I can get back to my slides. Hang on. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to try and take you through a little bit of code, which gives you a flavor of how we kind of built that and some of the things that you can do with the Web Audio API. So the first thing that you need to do is generate some white noise. So the way that you do that using the API, and if you have Google Chrome, you can open up the console at the bottom, the developer console, and kind of type these things in, and it should sort of work, so everything operates in terms of a context. So the context is the thing that abstracts the programmer away from the individual sound card and kind of makes the channels of the sound card and so on accessible, and also sets a sample rate. So that sort of familiar number, 44,100, is kind of the sample rate of the context in which we're working. So what we can do is create a buffer, so a small amount of samples, if you like, that are pre-allocated and empty within that context. So we can do that, and we can get access to the first channel of that. So if it's a mono buffer by default, you can get the first channel. That's what's happening in this line, get channel data. And then we can iterate over it. So it looks like C. This is JavaScript, but similar kind of thing if you've used C. So iterate over it to the size of the buffer, and then just set each sample to be a random number. And that will give you some kind of white noise, effectively. How really random it is depends on the buffer length, but for something like this where we're kind of filtering it and gating it, then this is sufficient. So we just generate enough of it. So you can do that. And then all you have to do is you have to create a buffer source to take the sound from that buffer, set it to the white noise. You can set it to loop, and then you just tell it to start now. And so zero is now. But you can, this is where you could schedule it to a certain time in the future. So you start it, and it will play some white noise. Yeah, that's what I've said. So you can trigger it, or you can trigger it into the future, effectively. So we've got a burst of white noise, well, a continuously looping white noise source, and we want to kind of gate it, so that kind of impulse thing, create an envelope around it, effectively. So the Web Audio API provides us with something called a gain node. So this is simply you can set what the gain would be, double it, halve it, that kind of thing. So we connect the white noise source that we've made to the gain node that we've created. So we're kind of starting to put this graph together where the noise source goes into the gain node. And then what we can do is an individual parameter of that. Oh, crikey. Well, what's going on now? And there we go. Thinks it's nighttime. Probably is. So what we can do is we have a gain node, and the gain has a parameter called gain, and we can kind of automate that parameter. So what we can say is linearly ramp the gain to the value of 1, so it defaults to 0, in, well, that doesn't match that, does it? But in a short amount of time, 1 millisecond, and then ramp it down over the course of half a second. So we can kind of say, ramp it up and then ramp it down. So that gives us a kind of simple envelope around that white noise. And then what we want to do is filter that, so remove the high frequencies. So that was the last part of our kind of gunshot noise. So the Web Audio API is providing us with a bi-quad filter, so a sort of two-pole filter. So we can say, I want low-pass filtering and set the kind of common parameters to that. And then connect it up, so connect the gain node to the filter. So that's sort of how the gunshot noise is working. So, yeah, I'm kind of a bit of a lightning tour through some of the features, but I think that's the simplest way to show you the kind of things, the level at least that you're operating at with this API. So you're not having to write filter code yourself and that kind of thing. You're being able to take a filter off the shelf and connect it up and set some parameters to it to kind of do some common operations quite quickly. So we thought we'd kind of look around and try and recreate some kind of other sounds. So I'm going to show you a few things now that give you an idea of what the API is capable of. That was the kind of sciencey bit. So this is another photo, it's an archive photo from the Radiophonics Workshop. This is Daphne Oram, a composer there. I like the way that she's composing with a slide rule. I think that's quite good.
Best way to do it.
Yeah. So behind her is this device here, which when I was at university, we had a lot of these in the lab, sort of Brüllenkehr signal generators, swept sign generators. And they were used at this time, I think, to measure the kind of acoustic properties of recording studios. You measured reverberation time, that kind of thing with them. So one was left behind, as the story goes, and the people at the Radiophonics Workshop realized that if you reduce the frequency to kind of audible musical frequencies, then you could kind of generate some sort of spacey sounds. And they called it the Wobulator. So this thing here is the Wobulator. Yeah, it kind of goes a little bit back. So it might seem kind of primitive, but what they were doing to generate tunes and play notes before was to kind of record each individual note onto a piece of tape and then kind of splice it together. So having bits of kit where you could kind of grab a knob and move it around, you could kind of play a tune with it, and it was a quicker way of getting the notes onto tape than it was splicing them. Another thing that I saw in a paper, a book about this, was they had a keyboard with lots of, you know, an octave's worth of kind of keys, and each one was turning on and off an individual oscillator, sort of a sine wave oscillator. So they had a bank of, you know, sort of 12 oscillators above each one tuned, and you could kind of play a sort of tune on these things, which I guess they drifted all over the place, but it was sort of time-saving, I guess, and very inventive, I think. So yeah, we're kind of interested in the Wobulator. If you want to know what it sounds like, here's a piece of Delia Derbyshire's music, which kind of features it. So that kind of wee music sound is the Wobulator, punctuating it. So the Wobulator was a kind of modulated oscillator, effectively. So you had an oscillator, and you were controlling the frequency of that oscillator with another oscillator. So you could kind of wobble the main frequency around by a small amount. And the amount that you wanted to wobble it around is kind of controlled by what the amplitude of that kind of modulating oscillator was. So let's have a look at that a little bit in code before I show you the demo. So you can create oscillators in the Web Audio API. They default to be sine wave, but you can pick other common types. In most of the implementations, they're kind of fully anti-aliased. You can go up through frequencies and there's no aliasing. And you can also kind of specify your oscillators in terms of their frequency components, or in the frequency domain as well as the time domain. So you can make an oscillator like this and connect it to your destination. And then remember, so that's this lower part of the diagram here, an oscillator connected to a destination. And then we have another oscillator connected to the frequency parameter of that oscillator. So we can create another oscillator and connect it to the frequency parameter. And then if we start both the oscillators, then we get that. So this is showing one of the interesting features of the Web Audio API, where all of the parameters of all the nodes are kind of controllable with other audio rate parameters, which is, you can do some quite interesting things, and you can get yourself into trouble as well, which is one of the things that I personally quite like about it. You can create feedback loops and those kind of things in quite a lot of noise quite quickly, and it's not stopping you from doing those things, which kind of allows people to be quite creative with it, I think, and do things with it that we hadn't expected they would want to do. So we did a recreation of the Wobulator, which I'm going to show you, if I can. So, this is our Wobulator. This might be a little bit loud. I don't know if we can ride it down a little bit. That was quite a lot of fun. Maybe not for my colleagues, but for me, I enjoy that very much. There's a reason why I'm no longer at the BBC. May or may not be related to that. We don't. So a little bit of a tour. So you've seen some of the nodes that are available through the Web Audio API. We've seen the audio buffer for creating kind of arbitrary samples. You can do things like load music in from web sources into buffers and manipulate them. Oscillators we've seen, the biquad filter, gain. There's a panner for kind of moving things around. So one of the primary use cases of the API is for gaming, where you kind of want to position sounds in simulated acoustic spaces. So there's kind of an equal power panner, but there's also a head-related transfer function-based panner for doing kind of quite interesting sort of positional audio stuff. There's a convolution filter. The script processor is there so that you can write audio processing code. It will just yield you a block of samples, 1,024 samples, say that's configurable, and then you can operate on them. So if you can fit your processing logic into that sort of time clock, you can kind of get stuff that's introducing quite low latency, but allowing you to just work at the sample level and do quite interesting things. There's a delay node. There's dynamic compression, so it's quite useful for for radio and game, when you join lots of different nodes together and you kind of want to flatten stuff out, you can kind of put a compressor at the end. And there's full support for multi-channel interfaces, so you can kind of address a sort of more kind of, I guess, sort of home cinema, but also kind of pro audio type requirements with that. A couple of things I haven't mentioned is it integrates well with microphone and webcam input, so you can kind of do this audio processing on the input from the microphone. So that's starting to get used for kind of echo cancellation and that kind of thing in video conferencing applications. And one thing that makes me really happy, and I don't know why, but I'm always excited about it, is there's kind of MIDI support. So you can kind of connect MIDI devices to the browser and use that to...
Is that actually real now?
Is Web MIDI real? Yeah. So it, for quite a while, it was available through a shim, but it's recently landed in Chrome. So you can get that, I think, probably if you've got the beta version of Chrome, you can get Web MIDI. Yeah. I hope it will come in other browsers. I think we're having a little bit of a hard time with Mozilla convincing them this is a good idea. They have a lot of other things to do, so it's not made it quite at the top of their priority list. But yeah, hopefully. There's a lot of push from people to have MIDI support. I met some people from Yamaha and Korg at a meeting, and they were really interested in it, in the MIDI support, sort of orthogonal to the whole audio. They're not so interested in creating instruments in the browser necessarily, but a lot of what they do, so if you buy a guitar effects pedal or a synthesizer from some of these companies, they often ship a CD-ROM with it, which is kind of what you can use to configure that synthesizer or that drum machine using a desktop application. And the problem with having a CD-ROM is it's kind of, the software goes out of date and shipping updates for it is quite difficult. Supporting, you know, all the different operating systems it might want to run on is quite hard. So they'd really like to just say, you know, if you bought one of our synthesizers, go to yamaha.com and plug it in and you can kind of configure it and share your configurations between other users and so on over the web. And yeah, that's kind of an interesting use case that I hadn't thought of that's quite exciting. So I wanted to do a few little demos now, so I'm going to have to go to the back here, but I want to show a few little demos of what you can do today with the Web Audio API. So the first one is an interesting kind of game that you can play to sort of compose music at the same time as other people and with other people. I'll fire it up and then I'll talk about it. Is it going to work? I didn't test the web connection very thoroughly when I ran. So what's happening is we're connecting to a kind of a sort of real-time pub/sub server that is going to stream the events from other users into our browser while we send events to them. And then the music that you hear is all being kind of created dynamically inside the browser. If it's going to work. Maybe. I hope not. That's a shame. I hope this isn't a... Yeah, if it starts plinking away in the background, we'll know what's happening and I'll switch back to it. Let's try a different one. So I asked at the beginning if people kind of interested in education and kind of teaching other people about music and sound and so on. So this is a really nice example. It's quite simple, but I like it a lot. It's a website that explains why certain drum loops or certain drum breaks are funky. It's called Funklet. So this was James Brown's drummer. So this is what the beat that he played in this record sounded like, and it got sampled a lot and used for lots of other music. One, two, three, four, get it! Go on. So that's kind of a sample of that recording. So what this person does is takes those recordings and then has created this little kind of widget at the top, which is using sample drum sounds and the Web Audio API to kind of recreate that drum loop. And then he describes, you know, for drummers, but people who are interested, like why it sounds funky, why it sounds the way it does. So we can play it. And we can toggle off various instruments. And we can kind of push it a little bit in time as well to see like how much you push it before it loses its kind of its characteristic sound. So I really like that. It's quite simple, but it's showing, you know, we can move these sounds in real time and trigger them, and it's still sounding in time. There's no, I can resize the browser window, I can move things around. It's not going to drop any of these sounds, really. But it's more interactive than just a loop would be and just a play button that I hit at the beginning. It lets you kind of move things around and change it and try and understand it yourself. The next one, let's see if Plink has come back up. It may be that the servers are down, that's possible. Okay, let's try this one. So, this is a sort of massively sampled piano simulator. So they've sampled lots of different, all the notes across the piano, but also at different kind of velocities, so that you can kind of play a synthesized piano and it sounds like more like a piano than a simple synthesized version. So it's using samples. It sounds quite good, and all that needs to be sent to the browser for this to play back then once the samples has been loaded is just the kind of note information themselves. It's sort of like a very small, you could think like a MIDI file. So there is some stuff here for doing MIDI in and out. I didn't bring a MIDI keyboard, so I can't show that. But what it does let you do is record. If you do connect your keyboard, you can record it for other people to listen to. So there's kind of some uploaded songs that people have done. Not quite as good as the one that ships with. So I think that's quite nice too. It's showing that we're starting to see kind of some of the things that have. So something like Google Docs, which has kind of taken off in quite a big way and lets you collaborate in a kind of Microsoft Word style environment with other people. At the beginning, it wasn't very full featured, and a lot of people were saying, "Oh, it's, you know, it's not going to take over from you know the full desktop software." But what it does do is leverage the strength of the web, which is, you know, that everyone can visit it by just visiting a URL in whatever browser they have and start collaborating. And we're starting to see some applications like that for music as well. So they may at the moment not have the power that we're accustomed to with sort of more specialist software, but they're kind of allowing people to collaborate and change things. So there's a piece of software called NoteFlight, which has been developed by one of the people involved in the working group, and it's sort of a Google Docs for sheet music. So you can kind of edit sheet music and collaborate on pieces of sheet music with other musicians. But to get a kind of consistent rendering experience, irrespective of what hardware you happen to have connected, it uses Web Audio API. So it might not sound like a fantastic rendering of this piece of music, but at least you know that all of your colleagues are hearing the same thing, which is quite useful when you're not in the same studio together. A little bit of a plug here. So I'm quite interested in analog synthesizers and analog synthesis. So I've been writing some articles on my blog about kind of how synthesizers work or used to work, analog synthesizers, and how you kind of go about recreating some of those sounds with the Web Audio API. So I kind of like this idea of being able to embed examples and that sort of stuff in line with the text and have more kind of interactive documents, if you like. So yeah, so finally, so this is the website that we put together at the BBC, at BBC R&D, about the Radiophonic Workshop. So it's at webaudio.prototyping.bbc.co.uk. If you search for Wobulator on Google, it'll probably come up as well. So we kind of wanted to put together not only the demos, but also a little bit of history and some kind of archive photography, and then some code so that other people, so we made all the code open source so that people could kind of study it and learn about the API. So you get a little bit of information about each demo. You get the demos themselves. So here's some simulated tape loops, which you can play and adjust the speed and try and play them in time to see how that kind of process worked. And then the code itself is kind of documented and annotated, so you can kind of study how that works. So yeah, one last demo. So this is the this is our simulation of the ring modulator, which was used for creating the sounds of the voices of the Daleks and the Cybermen in Doctor Who. So a ring modulator, so kind of mathematically what's happening is you're kind of multiplying two signals together. You can do that in the Web Audio API. It doesn't sound particularly authentic or kind of have that historical sound because the real ring modulator, the analog circuits that were used in the kind of early Doctor Who episodes were analog circuits, and what you'd have is a box with this kind of circuit in there. That's the ring that gets its name from the ring of diodes. And you would plug a tape machine into the box, and that would be your modulation frequency. So it would have a 30 hertz sine wave or something recorded on it in a loop, and that would be playing through there, and then the microphone you could speak into off stage and create the voices. So you had all these things like the kind of wobble on the tape and the sort of, you know, not running at a constant speed, and also the fact that these diodes kind of bled a little bit. They weren't perfect kind of gates, if you like, perfect. You know what I mean. So we kind of did a little bit of a simulation of that to try and capture some of those effects. So I'll just find out. So in our simulation, this is the tape loop, so you can change the speed of the tape, and then the microphone goes into the ring modulator box at the bottom. And the distortion control is kind of changing the amount of distortion that you get from those simulated diodes.
Exterminate! Exterminate! Exterminate!
Might want to turn it down a little bit.
Upgrading is compulsory. Upgrading is compulsory.
And if you have a browser that supports it, you can plug the microphone in and kind of do your own version of that too. Yeah, that's my presentation. Thank you very much. I just want to thank these people who I worked with, Pete, Olivia, Andrew, and Matt. Olivia's the chair of the Web Audio Working Group, works at the BBC, and is a good person to talk to about kind of all of that administrative and high-level kind of how this is working and where it's going and those kind of things. And he's here at the BBC, and these are some colleagues at the BBC who helped me build those demos. Yeah, thank you very much, and I'll take any questions. There's a microphone coming up.
Thank you. Can you hear me? Okay. Thank you. It was really interesting. Have you ever worked with Super Collider?
So I haven't worked with Super Collider myself, but So the person who designed and proposed the API in not quite the form it is today, but close to that, was a guy called Chris Rogers at Google, or formerly at Google. He's no longer there. And before he worked at Google, he worked at Apple, and he built the Core Audio subsystem for what became Mac OS X. And he worked with on that with the guy who did SuperCollider. So he said that there's at least, a kind of spiritual ancestry of this stuff through SuperCollider. If the API is not necessarily based on it, there's kind of influences.
There are any substantial differences you can just tell us?
I'm afraid I can't, because I'm not that familiar with SuperCollider. I suspect you can do, today you can probably do more with SuperCollider than you can with Web Audio API. But I think the concept of kind of chaining together blocks and being able to is that sort of influence. It's that way of working with audio. You can work at the sample level and manipulate individual samples, but the kind of sweet spot for the API is to be able to just chain these kind of blocks together.
Hi, thanks for the talk. It was really interesting. Actually, I did my research for last 3 months on Web Audio API. What I found out mostly challenging about Web Audio API is the timing and scheduling. Like coming from a pure data background, and like this is so easy to do. Like we have just like a Metro object, but I know that there are workarounds for it, like combining the JavaScript timing and the timing for the web audio, but is there any plan for a specific node that's going to handle the timing for web audio specifically?
So there's no plan at the moment, so I haven't seen anything like that. So when that issue comes up on the kind of mailing lists and our discussions, the point that's usually made is that because we're at quite an early stage, what we haven't seen yet is developers building libraries on top of web audio. So there's a couple of game libraries now that abstract away the kind of the synchronization of audio with kind of a canvas-based animation and using the animation timers and kind of make that a little bit easier or more familiar to people who are used to working with kind of game APIs. I think we'll start to see that more for more musical-based applications, kind of, scheduling and those kind of things. I do see people trying that kind of thing. I mean, the argument has always been to make the API not so low level that it's so difficult to work with, but to recognize that if we give developers the power, then they will build interesting abstractions on top of it that are suited to particular use cases. And so for people who come to the Web Audio API and wanting to do the kind of things that they're used to with other environments, at the moment it's quite frustrating, but I think when the API gets more widely adopted, you will start to see libraries that are kind of abstracting away, making it more intuitive. Yeah, and you know, if you're in the position to start writing libraries like that or kind of contributing some of the ideas that you've come up with in your research, I think it's a really great time to do that. You'll get a lot of support.
Yeah, I actually started, like, for example, for this particular use case, I started using the script processor node as an event source, which turns out it's not actually the best type because it has to come and like back and forth between the execution thread. So yeah, I mean, like there are if that happens, like it's more exciting for the musical part of it. That's my point. So that's like, for example, this talk is basically aimed towards like musical application people. Yeah. So if that like being like it's already there, like the plugins as you said. I mean, it would be really useful for the API to handle that as well.
Yeah, I mean, if you've got real-world experience of doing things, I'd really encourage you to just write a little bit about your experiences and share them with the public W3C mailing list. You usually get quite a good response. If you say, I've tried to do this, here's the code I came up with, either someone will come in and say, did you try it like this way and give you a bit of hand that way, or they'll say, yeah, that's a really good point, and we'll kind of try and make that a little bit easier. We've just moved all of the spec and the issue tracking to GitHub to make it a little bit easier for developers to kind of see what we're working on next and to file bugs with the spec itself, and that's quite a good place for them as well. And you say, I've tried to do this, I can't, and then hopefully it will, yeah, people will start thinking about better ways of addressing it. A lot of what you'll hear, especially now, is we might wait for a bit because there's a lot of the spec that's kind of underspecified and needs some work. And so feature enhancements or new features are getting punted a little bit. But I think there will be an appetite to come back to those and make sure that they're available.
I wondered whether the web API was suitable for doing object-based audio mixing, and could it be?
Could you give me a quick kind of what's object-based?
Another bit of R&D are doing in the BBC, which is rather than have multi-channel sound, you describe your audio in terms of objects and its environment. And I wondered if there'd been any looking at that doing that through a web API. As developing tools for doing object-based mixing.
Yeah. So I spoke to Tony a little bit about Tony Churnside about that a little bit. I think you could write some code that was able to translate from your kind of object-based environment to whatever the multi-channel output of that would be. I think Chris Pike up there did something with binaural rendering, so how do you say? When you try to give the impression of a multi-channel setup on two headphones by using kind of the convolution filter to do that. So that seemed to at least, I mean, I thought it sounded really good and it wasn't, although it was doing sort of 20, maybe 25 simultaneous convolution filters on my machine and in Chrome, it was coping fine with that. What else is there? So Matt Parody on the far right there is looking, so his background is in sort of ambisonics, and he's looking at kind of writing file format converters for ambisonic file formats to web audio. So you could kind of load them in and it would do the necessary JavaScript for you to do ambisonic reproduction. And have I seen anything else along those lines? Oh yeah, and Chris Pike was talking to me about maybe switching out the head-related transfer functions in the PANA node and making that kind of user specifiable. So I think at the moment it's specified to just ship with a standard set, maybe produced by ERCAM or something, a kind of standard HRTFs. And could you come up with a file format for HRTFs and allow those to be loaded in so that you could kind of do those sort of, yeah.
I have another question as well, if I may.
Yeah, please.
Has anyone expressed a desire to, or do you know of anyone who's trying to emulate old-fashioned synthesizers, Moogs and other great classics, in the API?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think when this thing came along, so one of the interesting parts about it was designed with sort of game audio in mind and kind of that sort of sample scheduling, but as soon as you mentioned these types of this type of API, you kind of get the early adopter people, and they tend to be people who are really excited, you know, like me, sort of excited about kind of synthesis and doing those sort of things. So yeah, there are a few kind of synthesizer, grab me afterwards and I'll give you a link, but there's a few kind of synthesizer things, and then stuff like the oscillator node wasn't originally in the spec, and it came because a lot of people were asking for those sort of things. So there's not everything in there. You can't do like hard oscillator syncing, which I think is quite useful for a lot of effects. So there's not a way of kind of resetting the phase of oscillators. You kind of have to hack around those sort of things. But yeah, people are making quite convincing simulations of various synths. There's one at the front here.
I've had to play with a few examples, and one thing I've notice, because I'm obviously trying to break it, is when you switch to a tab that's separate from the one running the audio, interesting things start to happen. I have no idea what they are. I was wondering if you might be able to explain what goes on there.
So what's happening probably in Chrome, you're seeing that, is what they do with... So each tab is running in a different process, and so those processes are given kind of different priorities depending on whether or not they're in focus or not. And at the moment, the audio thread goes with that particular thread's focus. So if you defocus the tab, then it starts to deprioritize it and you will start to, yeah, drop samples or whatever, the usual kind of things that you'd get if you kind of start throttling the CPU on that particular.
Is it something that has been considered in development at all?
Yeah, or? It's been considered. So the issue with it from our point of view is that there's nothing in the specification about what happens with tabs. So the kind of spec doesn't concern itself with the surrounding kind of browser operating ecosystem, if you like, or the kind of the environment which the Web Audio API is running in. And that's kind of deliberate because we'd like the Web Audio API to maybe be available in server-side applications and anywhere that JavaScript is available, perhaps. So it's kind of a browser vendor thing. So if you're seeing it and there's a reason, so there's a good application that you want, so like background music playing or something like this, the best place is to raise it kind of as a bug with the with Chrome or Safari or Firefox or wherever you're seeing it. And there are discussions happening within those organizations about kind of what you do. The problem if you don't do those kind of things is that background tabs can quite quickly, you know, steal a lot of resources from the thing that you're interested in, and you know that's quite difficult for them to deal with. But yeah, okay. I think there was one just in the middle there. Is that?
Thank you. Hello. Yeah, I was just curious how demanding all this technology is on the computer and the micro underneath. And you've kind of answered a little bit with the tabs, but if you can start putting lots of filters in and put high sample rates in, then you're surely going to just dominate the whole machine.
Yeah, it's definitely a concern. So the proposal, so there was another proposal on the table in the early days of this working group from Mozilla, and they made the, I think, quite sensible argument is that you've got JavaScript already, just give the developer access to the raw samples and you can process them in JavaScript. The API becomes really simple and all of the processing is offloaded to JavaScript libraries, and they can be reused and for graphics and anything else that you need. And then it was quite quickly shown for even the kind of simple use cases that model broke down quite quickly, and it was because it was so processor intensive to do kind of room based reverberation simulations, that kind of thing that you'd need in games. So that's where the kind of Web Audio API proposed by Google won out because because a lot of these common operations are actually handled at kind of low level optimized code in the browser itself, which helps a lot with this kind of resource usage. We have a couple of chip manufacturers involved with the working group, and they're paying attention because if this kind of stuff takes off and it starts to make it, especially on mobile devices that are underpowered, then they'd like to provide kind of chip level optimizations for these kind of use cases. And if it's a standard that's available, you know, it's going to be available on every browser on the phone or browsers on the phone, then you know they might be able to kind of head off some of the performance concerns by optimizing for it at the sort of silicon level. Does that answer your question? The only real answer is kind of depending on your application, you have to build it and test it on a bunch of different browsers.
Yeah,
and
I mean, and a mobile phone. I was just thinking, if with a lot of JavaScript, you could create a 48-track mixer with bicrop filters on every single channel, and it won't work. it'll crash.
Yeah.
So what's the actual sort of genuine sort of load you can stick on it?
So I mean, I've seen. So the multi-channel support is a little bit, it's not kind of fully there. So you can address channels of sound cards, but you can't address a multiple sound cards and that kind of thing at the moment. So it's sometimes difficult to kind of test this to like very high channel. But I've seen demos working with 12 to 20 channels playing simultaneous things and with a virtual mixer.
But running at 44.1 kilohertz.
Perhaps, yeah.
Multi-channel.
Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's, I think when people started putting digital audio workstations on computers, people thought they were crazy because they would never perform as well as, you know, analog tape or digital tape. And over time, the kind of the advantage of being able to do nonlinear editing on a large screen and the increases, you know, Moore's law and the increases in processing power means that, you know, nowadays it's a kind of, you know, it's a diehard kind of engineer who will do all their recording on analog tape.
I'm just curious to know just how much loading it does create, whether it's not worth worrying about.
I'm quite surprised at how much you can do and not notice the difference. But you're right. I think the what you can do in the browser today versus what you can do in a dedicated desktop application, there's a difference, definitely. You can do more in a dedicated desktop application. But where it might win out is in the, you know, when these applications come along that let you collaborate online and access your kind of tracks from any machine in the building or any machine in the world and work on them, you know, in a couple of years, computers are, you know, 5-10 times faster than they are today, then those kind of performance considerations may not be as significant. But the point you raise about mobile devices is definitely, there's a lot of talk and concern about mobile devices, yeah, in the web audio group at the moment about, yeah, the optimizations that you have to do to kind of access samples and large volumes of audio data, but preventing kind of race conditions and concurrency issues when you're in environments that they need to be massively parallelized or massively multi-threaded in order to take advantage of kind of low power chips and that kind of thing.
Thank you very much, Chris, on behalf of everybody here. The lesson today, I believe, is stop everything you're doing now and do it again in JavaScript. Because it's coming whether you like it or not.
So, thank you very much for having me. Thank you.
Last thing to say is because I'm not Rupert Murdoch, I can thank the BBC twice. So thanks once again for the venue. Plug the event again. Next month, November the 12th. Dolby Theatre, Soho Square. And if you want to join the AES or you're interested in what we do and you're not already a member, please get in touch with us via our website, aes-uk.org, and have a word with us via the contact form. We'll be very happy to talk to you. Thank you very much.